Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be part of our 20 Years, 20 Voices series, celebrating the upcoming 20th AX conference. During these calls, we're talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolution of the concessions industry over the last two decades and change. And today we're talking with Stu Holcomb, founder and managing partner of Travel Retail Partners. Stu, thanks for taking some time.
Oh, my pleasure, Andy. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. Stu, you go back to 1990 in the airport industry. So even a little further back than the AX conference, you started with Delaware North. And I'm wondering, is that how you got into airports? What got you into this industry in the first place?
You know, it's 20 years, my God. It's amazing. That's flown by, right?
It has.
Yeah, I did. I joined Delaware North, but it was really CA1 services. I was living in Buffalo, New York, and my family, and I was working with a consumer packaging company. Had an opportunity to make that transition, and John Luther, who's been our industry and eventually evolved into other industries, all within food, but he was heading up CA1 services, and they were looking for a business development person really to help them with proprietary brands. Because at that time, proprietary brands was huge. We didn't have a lot of brands coming into the airports at times. And so I sat down with him and said, you know, I'm a frequent flyer, and I know that I can create better proprietary brands that were out there than were out there at the time. So he gave me a shot, and I was there for about 12 years, a lot of different capacities, working on their proprietary brands from pizza concepts and coffee and bar concepts. Then we evolved into bringing in brands, and Wolfgang Puck was one of the first brands that we brought into the airports back in LAX. And it was a great experience. I mean, it kind of really whet my appetite to deal with restaurateurs and, you know, classically known celebrity chefs and things like that. But we had a great time and wonderful people. And Delaware North was a good company at the time to work with, just for the simple fact that you had the different divisions, and I had the opportunity to work with the sports division and work with the airports and other groups, and really had a lifelong established relationships with many of our former Delaware North employees now spread out through the industry from different brands and different companies. It was great. It's been a hell of a ride. It was a hell of a ride.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how folks keep popping up too. It's everybody I've talked to for this project so far, they cite people that they started working with 15, 20 years ago, and they're all still bouncing around the industry in some way, shape or form. I am curious though. You said you thought you could do better proprietary brands than what was out there. You were pretty confident you could beat the old stale pizza and the hot dogs sitting on the racks and things like that they were talking about in the early days of concessions.
Well, yeah, I was young. I knew everything.
Nice.
Quickly came to find out I didn't know everything.
Well, isn't it amazing how I think there's somebody wrote a song about how the older they got, the less they knew or something like that. So you did 12 years there and then you went into the movie industry. Lowe's Cineplex for a few years back. What impact did that have on your
One was really because my background was hotel and restaurant management. And okay. I loved, you know, food. And at the time, Lowe's was looking to expand into a dining theater where you had restaurants within the theater. And they brought me in to head that up, which was great. I mean, here it is. It's a good opportunity. I loved it. It was down in Manhattan. It's the based headquarters. And we moved to Connecticut at that point. It was a great experience. However, I also realized that the theater industry is a demanding industry, as is our industry here, but it's a little bit different. And then Lowe's decided at that time that they actually were going to end up selling to AMX. And AMX wanted to go back out and just focus in on popcorn, soda, and candy. And that's not my passion. So they were going to put a temporary hold in the dieting, which they never really reactivated. So I decided to get back into the industry. And I had the opportunity to join, and I worked with Faber for a few years helping them, because they didn't really have a true business development team at that point. Great experiences. We had some wonderful successes. And then I ended up joining HDS, which later became Lagardère. It was owned by Lagardère for years. Mm-hmm. But HDS was a great company based in Toronto. I had offices here in the U.S. And I had a great opportunity to work with Jerry and the team up there for several years. So, sure.
What did you learn? What was different, if anything, about the scene up in Canada? We Toronto and Montreal, a couple of great cities up there, and some really interesting cities and airports. Vancouver. What did you learn while getting the exposure to those Canadian airports up there?
Well, I love Canada. I really do. I love Canada. I love the way that they operate. A little bit different, as we all know, than here in the U.S. They don't have the restrictions that we do in the U.S. operations. I think
in what sense?
Well, I just think from having regulations on, you know, what companies can come in, and the competitiveness is there, but it's not as restrictive in many respects. We have the opportunity to work with the management team up there a little bit closely, ask more questions. It's not as rigid. We're not being really, shall we say, confined by, let's say, city council and some of the authorities. I think that it was easier during that time period to work directly with the airport operators and say, you know, what is it that you're looking for? And here's what we can do. They all had competitive bids. That wasn't an issue. But I just felt at that time there was a real focus on how they really could work with their operators to create a program that was really beneficial, not only from the financial aspect to the airport, but also to the consumers. I mean, you know, we're in an industry that is service oriented, and, you know, people are apprehensive of flying back then more so than they are today, but still today is an issue. And we're all here to make that experience a lot better and easier. And I think that the focus there was, you know, how do we accomplish that? Vancouver was one of the best airports I worked with in years. One, they had the data. They knew what consumers were liking. They were also very creative. When they created that sense of place, I always tout them as one of the first airports that really, truly created a sense of place that others tried to emulate. And some have. There's no doubt about it. I mean, some of the newer airports that we have that are coming online today have really created a wonderful experience and an environment that people enjoy. But Vancouver is one that I always point to saying, you know, that was one of the first ones that I got to experience and just had a wonderful time doing it. So they really nailed it.
Can you expand on that a little bit? The sense of place is something that, for the last, decade plus, we've been hearing that's every airport wants to create a sense of place. But what were a couple things that they did that really knocked it out of the park, as you're saying?
Well, I think it was more about just the environment. So it's river to sea. And in the international building, you walk through, and they had a little stream that went through the post-security location that had a park environment with bridges that went over the stream. And then it ended up into, I can't remember how many thousands of gallons aquarium that was a vertical aquarium. And it was just one of those wonderful experiences that you're walking through a park with retail and food and beverage surrounding it, coming to this beautiful aquarium. I remember also coming back from an international flight, and as we're coming into customs, we're walking on the bridgeway, and there is this massive dome window jellyfish that was backlit. It was just absolutely spectacular. And it really kind of made you forget that you were flying, and you're seeing the experience of what really made Vancouver, you know, an iconic aspect of land to sea. in many respects. And the food and beverage followed the theme, right? I mean, so retail shops and food and beverage followed the theme throughout. They were flexible and worked with their operators back there. At that time, it was LS, Lagardère, and also Hudson they were working with, and created some really wonderful concepts that tied into that same theme.
Okay. Yeah, when you're describing aquariums full of jellyfish, et cetera, I mean, that isn't the stereotype for what people think about when they're thinking about airport travel, for sure.
No, it wasn't. It was just one of those things that it's the wow factor. I think that, you know, retail and food and beverage are always going to be part of the airport industry, right? But it's the other eye-catching elements that people love to see. It's, you know, the waterfall feature that was in Detroit when they had that in the central terminal, the McNamara terminal, that caught everybody's attention. I remember watching kids trying to get up there and run between the spouts, albeit they weren't supposed to, but it was great. It was a lot of fun to see.
That's you gotta have the ways to keep those kids amused, even if they're not supposed to be doing it. That's good stuff. We're talking with Stu Holcomb today, founder and managing partner of Travel Retail Partners. It was after those days with, HDS became LS Travel Retail, and then Lagardère Travel Retail, ultimately combining with Paradies and becoming Paradies Lagardère. Well, as is going on a lot in the industry these days, it was about that time that you did strike out on your own, created Travel Retail Partners. You got back to your roots with those early Delaware North days and started working with brands one-on-one, helping them get into the
right.
What made you want to do that, and how did that all come together?
Well, I think it's one of the ideas that I've always had in mind. I mean, being business development for larger companies like Lagardère and working with Delaware North and having a lot of other interested parties, Susan Stackhouse with Stellar Partners, and she and I have been friends for years. And she reached out to me asking me if I could help on a couple of opportunities to identify some locations in various airports for their company. We worked with her. I had friends at Swarovski Jewelry that didn't have a business development team, loved the airports, but didn't really know how to get into them. So I started working with those brands at their request and helping them guide what their program should be, targeting airports, finding operators that would fit their philosophies, and put the two together. So it's kind of a jigsaw puzzle. And I love tactical jigsaw puzzles. So that's really what was the motivating force behind me to create Travel Retail Partners, because we're all partners in the same thing. And working with each other, trying to bring various people together and find the right operators and right fits. So it allowed me to continue working with the Paradies Group and the Hudson Group, Marshall Retail Group, but also some of the smaller operators like Chloris, Corliss Stone Littles and Patty Rainier and April Stewart, you know, getting some of these smaller operators to have brands that they could operate because the relationships that we had, especially with my retail side, we were looking for operators that would basically operate as a wholesale business and take the brands and run with them. And they had a lot of focus and they had a lot of ties, and we were very specific on the operators we wanted to have, just because of the simple fact that it's about the customer experience, and brands are all about customer experience.
Sure. You're saying that it was actually a pretty easy sell in that the brands wanted to get into the airports, that they were okay with getting into the airports and in some ways handing over some control to other folks and letting them operate the brand in the airport. That wasn't a difficult sell at all?
No, I don't think it really was a difficult sell. I think that you were looking at categories. I mean, beauty has been in the airports for years, right? So you had the Body Shop, L'Oreal, Kiehl's, and they've been in airports through duty free for years. But it was interesting. I think the first opportunity that Kiehl's realized it was when they had a relationship with DFS in San Francisco, and DFS ended up creating a small little freestanding kiosk in the International Building, and the sales just shot through the roof. So then we started looking at it and then having opportunities where we could pursue an individual Kiehl's store. And we started picking up on those. And I think Hudson was one of the first groups that started, taking that outside of the duty-free shops and pursuing individual Kiehl's stores. And they did well. We really did well. Then all of a sudden, the body shop got into it. L'Oreal created some various brands that was a multifaceted brand store. So you had a lot of their L'Oreal products all into one store, which was great. You went from being duty free to a duty paid. And that made sense because back then, when we're talking 10, 15 years ago, most domestic travelers couldn't go into the duty free shops because of the restrictions. So, and people are still looking for the same products. So that's one of the reasons why we decided to bring it out into the duty paid. And we had some great success. And there was a lot of interest with it. Now, that again, most of these brands didn't want to operate the stores because they didn't know the airport environment. And we all know that operating in airports today is not the same as the commercial street. So a little bit more demanding, a little bit more risk to it. So at that point, we created a system in which they could operate the store with the guidance and the support of the national brands. And the brands really loved it because it exposed them to a really target-rich audience that they were their consumers. We're looking for, in many respects, highly educated, highly traveled individuals with a strong net worth. And that really was a target at that time. I would say for the first 10 years, it was great. I mean, we had a lot of fun. Things evolve and things change. And especially retail today is not what it was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, you read my mind. And where I was going to go next is, what's the future of specialty retail in airports? Because that's a big one that we've been trying to answer for the last few years.
Well, it's not only specialty retail, but our industry as a whole, right? With the cost of entry into airports, our labor costs, albeit I think that every employee that's out there deserves a good, fair wage. I know that there's a bill, I think, in LA that they're talking about having $30 an hour wages for airport staff.
I saw that.
It's not going to be easy, right? You're dealing with specialty retail, and you need to have individuals that understand that particular brand, especially beauty. Beauty is not something that you can just pull somebody off the street and give them a crash course and say, go sell, and I want $1 million store. It just doesn't work that way.
Do you think I'd have a shot in the beauty industry?
Well, men's care. I'm not sure how you're going to be with cosmetics. I don't know.
Just kidding. Anyway, sorry, you were
saying.
That's
a discussion for later.
Yes.
But I do think that, for the most part, we've always had a challenge. The industry as a whole is looking for quality individual. It's not an easy environment to work. It's a demanding industry. So I think it's evolved in today's, for example, I don't want to hesitate here, but we've since COVID's come in, we're beyond that aspect of it. We're the new direction post-COVID. And costs are still there, but we have set our targets. We need to have at least 4 million in footfalls in front of the store in order to have a store that's very viable and that a self-sustaining store that's a reasonable size. I'm not saying only 750 square feet. We need to have that footfall based on the fact of historical sales. Most airports see an average of maybe 18 to 20% of their travelers engaging in specialty retail. That's small. And given the fact that you have 7 years on average term, you're fast approaching $1,000 a square foot for capital build out. You're already with labor costs that are $18 to $19 to $20 an hour. It's a challenge. It's a real challenge. And I think that brands today are in there because they want to promote their brand equity, not just product. I know that, you know, the industry as a whole has gone to the multi-branded store formats, mm-hmm. which make a lot of sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense for the operators. You consolidate your labor costs, you consolidate your CapEx. It's a sound business proposition. Unfortunately, brands need to have a presence, and they have to have a minimum square footage to create that brand equity and that visibility. Otherwise, they just become a product. You're a vendor, and they can sell their product e-commerce and make more money via e-commerce versus going into a multi-branded store and having a very small footprint. They're not in it for that. They're in it to build that brand equity and the engagement with their customers. That's why we require dedicated employees. You know, we can't afford to have employees that are working in candy one day and working in cosmetics the next. It's just not feasible. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Does that mean we likely see less specialty retail going forward than traditionally here the last 20 years?
You know, I think maybe some of the old stalwart brands, possibly. I think that unless we can establish a minimum square footage in a multi-branded set of, let's say, 400 square feet, chances are yes. Now, that said, I also think the industry as a whole is probably ripe for change and transition. I think that instead of having stores that are fully stocked out with inventory, I think we could see ourselves getting into boutiques or showrooms in which you're going to have that engagement with the consumer, see some product out there. You can use testers and feel the product. You can touch the material, but yet you don't have to carry the inventory. You don't have to have that massive inventory because I'm going to customize your purchase to what you want specifically. I can have it engraved. I can have it labeled, embroidered with your initials, and then send it to you. I think more brands are looking at it that way, especially those brands that are currently on the internet. They could use the airport as a springboard to engage consumers that they may not be engaging via other electronic means or social media aspects. This way, people, they always want to touch the fabric. They want to see what it feels like. And because we're a touchy-feely society. And I think that they really want to get out there in engagement. So I do think that our industry as a whole will evolve. And I do think that you'll see some things out there changing. And it makes sense because the CapEx is going to be small. Mm-hmm. The real question is going to come back to be, is it specialty retail? Is it advertising? Is it a hybrid? And then how does the airport capture some of that? I think that the brands are going to look at it because the engagement there is I'm engaging with the consumer and I got their digital information. Now I can establish a relationship with them long term. And that's really what all brands want to do. They want to establish a relationship with you as long as possible.
Sure. Speaking of evolution and things potentially continuing to change here in the industry, you've not only worked with some of the big legacy special retail brands, but you've worked with a lot of smaller brands and ACDB operators over the years too. And right. You mentioned the cost of buildouts and labor costs. Getting tougher and tougher for small businesses to operate as well. How would you say you saw that piece of the business evolve over the last couple decades, and where do you see that going forward here as well?
It's an interesting question, and I think it's going to evolve. Again, I think that I've had conversations with several people, and I think lately we've seen the focus on small business enterprises starting to take shape. I think a lot of airports have looked at this and they've taken the traditional ACBB operators that are out there who basically qualify to being small business enterprises. They have a great opportunity to say, I don't want to say carve out, but they can set aside certain amount of spaces for small business enterprises and keep the big boys out of it from a competitive standpoint. And that way they can make sure that those opportunities are in the right position for those operators to attract as many eyeballs and people engaging with them as possible. That said, I think it's the cost, it's the build out cost. And I think that airports are going to have to take that in consideration as well to say, how do I work with these operators and how can I ensure their success, you know, giving them, acting as a mentor to them, but also giving them opportunities to grow their business and having the best possibility of the stars aligning in essence, right? Whereas when we have the programs in which the larger prime operators bring in partners, either through a joint venture or as a subletting, we want to ensure that those sublet opportunities are in the right position for that operator to be successful. I mean, the larger primes today have the ability to absorb some of those additional costs that the smaller guys don't.
Yeah.
So we need to see that coming on board. And I know a lot of the primes, being the Parodies and the Hudsons, the Marshall Retail Group, have done programs, and they've, you know, they've worked with their operators. Some of them more on joint venture operations than they are on subtenants or sublets, but it's evolving. It'll get there. So beyond that, it's been interesting. We've had opportunities with each of our smaller operators, like say the Corlisses and the Patty Rainiers and Aprils, and each of the brands want to work with them. They want to find the right programs, and they're willing to adapt. But at the end of the day, both companies have a bottom line that they have to hit, right? And so they all have P&Ls that they have to hit. So it takes time. It's not something that, you know, these big brands can just say, sure, I'm going to give you this margin, because it affects their mind as well. So sure. I think that we have to be very diligent in how we approach it and be creative on how we can look at it and say, okay, if I give you more CapEx and contribution to build out and keep my margins the same, will that sufficiently support you? In a lot of cases, we've seen that to be the case.
We're talking with Stu Holcomb, founder and managing partner of Travel Retail Partners. Stu, the build-out costs have been brought up. We've been hearing about those for years, and it's come up three or four times in our conversation here already. And I'm wondering what your thoughts. I mean, do airports need to change their thinking on this at all? I mean, does it have to be the whatever the number is for square footage involved investment? You know, does it have to be the, you know, knock it out of the park every time? Or is there a point at which maybe somebody's got to look at it and say, you know, very good is good enough here to keep the cost a little more in line, so it is a little easier to make those profits that everybody needs to have? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, not my background, not my the depth here. However, I do think that we have to take a look at some of the build out costs, and then more specifically, midterm refurbishments. And you know, sometimes we get into midterm refurbishments; those are the ones that can kill us the most. I think that if a brand comes in and has a truly dedicated design and construction department, they know how to build their stores, right? And they build them with great detail, and they know that they have to be durable because there's a lot of wear and tear. Airports even have that much more wear and tear. But I think that what we've learned over the years is how to build stores that can be adaptable, but yet maintain the costs down. And the focus today has been sustainability, recyclability. How do we keep things every day fresh, which I think is extremely important for the consumers? Again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. Brands are looking to build their brand equity. And they're not going to have a store that's shabby looking. That's going to help brand build that equity, right? So they want to ensure that their stores are fresh and look good. They also come at a cost. There's no doubt about it. But what we really need to understand in airports, I believe, are heading in the right direction, is saying, how do we really try to keep those costs in line? And it might be through the fact that they contract and they have a dedicated GC that they can whittle down the cost. A lot of it is being driven by market conditions, right? So if you have a lot of development going on in any one metropolitan area, you know, trying to capture some of those GCs and bring them into the airport is that much more expensive. It's that much more challenging. And then you have the cost of materials and things like that. But when we get into markets that are having a minimum of $1,000 a square foot, and then having these stores that are over, you know, 1,000 square feet, that's a, in my opinion, extremely difficult environment.
Now, a lot of zeros.
I'm sorry?
It's a lot of zeros.
A lot of zeros, exactly. But if we took some of those stores that are 1,000 and made them 2,000, 3,000, then you create that large multi-branded store. And then you can bring in brands that have a minimal square foot. And you create a truly integrated retail environment where they're going to be shopping off of each other. And we see those popping up. I mean, I think every company has established one or two of those. And for the most part, they've been exciting. And for the consumer standpoint, they come in and they're shopping various categories and brands. And the engagement of that impulse purchase has been phenomenal. Some operators are getting it. Some operators are just learning to get it. And I think that we'll see that continue because that is one way that we can work to get one longer terms, but also two, to be able to, in order to get those longer terms, we have the ability to amortize those costs off, albeit they're higher. But at the same time, we really need to, from a brand standpoint, we have to have that dedicated labor that also knows what that brand's all about. Instead of doing candy one day and coming to beauty the next day, we really have to have that. And so it's going to take a lot of coordination from the brands, operators, and airports to create that truly engagement environment.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense. I think you might have found my niche when you mentioned candy. I think I've got a decent shot at candy sales.
Not the only one.
Yeah, the competition's probably pretty good there too, but I'll hold my own. You started to spin it forward there a little bit, and that's kind of where I wanted to go with the next question. Anyway, Stu, what's your vision for where we go over the next 10 or 20 years? What do airports need to add that isn't there right now? What do you see airports doing to take it up yet another notch? It's certainly a more interesting, engaging industry than it was 20 years ago. A lot more interesting, a lot more exciting. Customer experience definitely on the rise. But if in Stu Holcomb's ideal airport, what does the future look like 5-10 years from now?
A lot more wine bars.
I like it. I like it. Candy and alcohol. We're talking my language.
There we go. I mean, it was always, in my opinion, it was always burgers and beer. I mean, that's what I lived for. So, and wine. But we have a totally different audience coming in, right? We still haven't had here in the U.S., North America, we still don't have the international flights coming in. As U.S. citizens, we are flying out. We've already exceeded the 2019 numbers. But we haven't had the influx from the more European and Asia Pacific market into our area as we did back in 2019. But we also have a very younger audience. Millennials are going to be the predominant shopper and traveler in the airport in the very, very near future. And they buy differently, right? They are more experiential. They are looking at technology a lot more. They're the ones that are apt to buy off their phone very quickly. When they have that itch to buy something, they're on their phones and boom, it's done, right? They don't need to walk into an airport. And I think that that's part of the reason why we've seen the change. We're seeing a shift more into food and beverage and travel convenience than we are into specialty retail, just for the simple fact that brands are changing. And some of the brands that have been in the airports for years are not necessarily resonating with the new millennials that are out there, right? Old folks like me traveling through, they're going there to, you know, take that European travel or take a long extended vacation, go visit the grandkids, which is all good, right? But then again, we also are looking at things that we need to have. Then you have the influx of our value carriers, and the ultra value carriers have a totally different mindset on their engagement. When they fly, they're going from point A to point B, and a lot of their resources and capital want to be and have been saved up, be spent at the destination. And when they're coming home, they're just buying necessities, the necessary things, because they want to make sure they have enough to pay the rent, the mortgage, put food on the table. So their focus is totally different. And we've seen a huge influx of the ultra low cost carriers coming into play. Mm-hmm. That said, we also have a huge influx of airport and third party lounges that are taking some of the target rich environment consumers that we've been looking for out of the equation. They're not out there impulsively shopping and walking by the stores. They're sitting in the lounge. So the task for us is, how do we engage them? How do we get inside those clubs and work with them? Well, you can't have every single brand that's out there, you know, trying to put up a little table into, you know, any of these clubs. So we have to be very creative on how we work with them. And I know some clubs are playing with the idea, do we have kind of a lounge store? You know, it may be a QR code, or it may be a featured product of the month. Those members, though, those customers that are up there are going to be born really buying from the fact that, geez, I need to have more of this product or this fragrance. It's not that I'm looking for something new. I want to just replenish what I have, which is fine. But then again, you know, we have to find a way to engage them. And I think as an industry, we'll come up with that, especially as we have new members coming into our industry that are very creative, technologically wise, right? And they're very savvy, social media, electronics. We'll find the right equation. I just don't happen to have the answer. Otherwise, I'd be extending my career in this industry for a little bit longer.
Yeah, well, I hear you there. I when it comes to technological solutions, I'm not the answer there either. I can be the answer when it comes to somebody putting a cocktail down on the bar, but when it comes to technology, it's going to have to be somebody that comes after both you and me.
There we go.
Stu Holcomb, founder and managing partner of Travel Retail Partners. Thanks for taking some time. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about that we haven't hit on?
No, I just want to thank the industry for giving me the opportunity to grow. It's been a great 35 years, and I absolutely love it. I do think that this industry has some really great talent that's out there. And I know some new individuals are going to be coming in and really going to create some new direction. And I just can't wait to be part of it from a consumer standpoint. But all I'll say is thank you. And thank you to AXN. I remember you started off this conversation when the first conference. And I remember Pauline, you know, first put out the flyer. It was a 2-page flyer. And now it's in a whole different category. The industry as a whole has changed. Your conferences have changed, and it's really been an asset to our industry. So thank you.
Thank you, Stu. I very much appreciate you taking some time. Keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ann.